loving, a little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life, oh so right, my Dixieland
life. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Friday morning. Thank you so much. Real quick programming note, Jennifer Fiddler, Dale Jackson, and Stephanie Holden-Smith coming up on Monday's program. So make sure that you tune in for that. But joining us now, we do this every week. He is our returning champion, as I like to say, State Senator Chris Elliott here with us. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. Great to be with you today.
Hey, thanks for making time. Are you keeping up with the shenanigans in the first congressional district here? You got any thoughts on that?
Oh yes. Well, we knew it was going to pop up sooner or later. You know, anytime you've got two sitting congressmen stuffed into the same district, there's going to be, you know, some divided loyalties. Incumbent versus incumbent. And we've seen some of those things popping up here, and I will just have to see how all that plays out. But I think, you know, Congressman Carl has a good proven, you know, conservative track record. He's from Mobile. He knows Baldwin County like the back of his hand. He was a good partner when we were both on the county commission together at the same time. And he served the first congressional district well. And I hope the voters will send him back to continue to do that.
That sounds like an endorsement to me, but I think the bigger story for me here is that the courts have really screwed this up. And maybe not so much the first congressional district, although that is pretty screwy. That second congressional district, Senator, there is a chance that people who live in Spring Hill or listen to this show right now, a year from now, well, a little more than a year from now, will be represented by a guy who represents North Huntsville right now.
Yeah, and just the notion that the courts, you know, and again, courts and activist judges would turn on its head the concept of communities of interest, and that those need to be grouped together, and said, no, we need to have a majority-minority district, and we will do whatever it takes to pack enough black folks into one district so that they can, you know, they can vote, you know, for a black person. And the fact that, you know, they just seem so presumptuous to think that, you know, we're going to use somebody's skin color to determine how they're going to vote. And then we're going to create a district based on skin color to create another Democrat seat in their minds. I just think just flies in the face of, you know, it is the reverse of what we should be trying to do, which is treat people like people and let them vote and not create these weirdo gerrymandered districts, which is what the courts have done. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, when the Supreme Court finally takes a look at this again, that it'll be overturned and we'll be back the other way. You know, the ping pong ball goes back again. It's embarrassing. I wish we didn't have to do it, but, you know, we're following the federal court's orders right now. We'll just have to see if they stand long term.
Well, I think though, like, just imagine, you're trying to defend this map and you have to like say, oh, well, how did that work out for you? Well, now we have Congressman Anthony Daniels. Isn't that great? Well, yeah, but wasn't he like a Madison County, North Alabama guy, 200 miles from the district, which, you know, you can run legally, and I understand all that. But all that tells us is the communities of interest question, that there are no true communities of interest, no unifying principle of a second congressional district, that somebody from the opposite end of the state can come in and win a seat potentially, tells you what you need to know, just how screwed up and Frankensteinian that district is.
Exactly. And listen, that's not a slide on Representative Daniels, who I serve with, and I will tell you is one of the more reasonable, you know, business-minded folks on the other side of the aisle. I mean, he's a Democrat, don't get me wrong, but when you've got to work with somebody on the other side of the aisle, he's one that I'd want to work with. But yes, you're correct. If you're thinking about, you know, how convoluted this is, you know, example one should be, hey, you got a guy from Huntsville that's about to represent folks in Spring Hill, and somehow or another, that's all okay. If that doesn't exemplify how messed up this is, I don't know what does.
Yeah, I agree with that. I guess we'll see how it goes. But in the meantime, we got some fascinating politics, for better or for worse. The other thing, and you mentioned this, and people I don't think have given this any thought until you mentioned it, but we talk about the 2nd Congressional District and wanting to keep that Republican. Well, if you have gambling on the ballot in 24, it's going to, I guess in theory, and this is proven out whenever they do something like this in other states, when you put something like this on the ballot, it's going to drive up Democrat turnout. And what it could do, it could be a difference maker in that very competitive purple district.
Well, there are politics that drew these districts, and there are, you know, politics that are involved in the election, and the folks that are elected officials are all, you know, are all very keen on those politics. So I think it's pretty reasonable to say that it would be a mistake to put gaming on, the presidential, election, that it would drive up Democrats, turnout. And that's not something that the majority in either, House should want to do, either chamber should want to do. So, that's something I'm going to be watching for, so that we could, obviously we want to pay attention to what's going on in CD2, and if there is a chance for a Republican to win, I certainly don't want to torpedo it by some action of the legislature. But I'll be honest with you, I think the whole gaming conversation has got miles and miles to go before we get to any kind of solution. And it will be something that I personally will be sitting back and watching to see how it goes in the House and what happens. I'm not getting down into the details of it until something actually matriculates. It is a very much a work in progress.
Well, something I keep hearing, and I want to bounce this off of you, the old special session in a session, and this will be, 4 out of 5 years that the governor might do this. What if she calls a special session at the beginning of the session to try to force gaming or gambling or whatever you want to call it through?
I think it would be a huge mistake for Governor Ivey to try to force this issue in the legislature, and I think it would result in failure. I think that is the surest way to make the legislature, vote against anything if they feel like it's being forced, or if they feel like outside interests up to and including the executive branch are trying to push this issue. Let the House do its work, let the Senate do its work. If the House can get its head around it, it will be the first time that they've been able to do that, and let that work. But if the governor wants gaming to, or a lottery or anything like that to fail, then the best thing she can do is call a special session and try to cram it down somebody's throat. It will result in the immediate death, in my mind, of any successful gaming legislation.
Well, it looks to me like, I think Ledbetter can get it done in the House. He's been able to show that he's able to change enough minds, twist enough arms, and get things through. When he goes upstairs, I mean, that's a total different ballgame. And look how this played out when y'all did redistricting. The House did their thing. The Senate did their thing. The Senate ultimately prevailed. I had no reason to think that if there was an impasse here between the House and the Senate would not be like, no, we're doing it our way, whatever that may be, which may be no gambling at all.
Well, again, I haven't seen what the House is doing, certainly not a final product. I don't think they have a final product yet, and I wouldn't expect them to have something final until we got very close to the beginning of the session in February. But the idea that it would leave the upper chamber unchanged, or frankly, given the changes that have happened in votes upstairs in the upper chamber, that it would leave the chamber at all is in doubt. And so, whatever comes upstairs, it will go through the legislative process just like anything else. And the Senate will take a look at it, and we will figure out what the attitude of the body is upstairs and whether or not something can pass. I want to see a lottery pass for the people of the state of Alabama. I want that money to go to fix roads and bridges and widen I-65 and do the important work that we need to do on an infrastructure-related basis. You know, there are a lot of calls out there. It needs to go to education. It needs to go to education. There's a $2.2 billion surplus in the education budget. There was a similar surplus last year. The education budget has all of the growth taxes going to it and has grown exponentially and, frankly, without a lot of difference in educational outcomes that we can measure. So I think we ought to put that money in infrastructure. But there will be a multitude of different legislators on both sides of the aisle have different opinions on where the money goes. That will all have to go through the legislative process. And again, forcing that through in a special session is a recipe for failure.
Do you think there's any appetite to do what you just said, to take any proceeds from gambling? Because it's always education, 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 and put them toward other things. I mean, is that a legitimate movement you think that could happen?
It will have to be in order to get my vote.
Wow. So, because you never hear that discussion. And it's always assumed that the only way it will happen is if it's put toward education. I think maybe that's true with some lawmakers, but I don't think the public is that wedded to it going to education. If you're for gambling, you're not for gambling because it's going to help schools. You're just for gambling for whatever reason you want it in your state, right?
You just want to bet on football and you want to get a lottery ticket, you know, and I'm okay with those things. You know, a lot of that's happening already. You know, this whole notion of table games and all these casinos and all this kind of stuff, that doesn't resonate with me. And I don't think my constituents are really excited about that. They are interested in sports betting and they are interested in a lottery. And I think that we ought to have real tangible results from the revenue realized from that and in the form of, you know, easing traffic congestion and doing real transformative projects for the state of Alabama, as opposed to just throwing it at education, where we have spent billions and billions of additional dollars over the last couple of years. We've got enough money in education. Those things are funded. And so let's put it where we can see real demonstrable results that will grow our economy well into the future.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, I put you on the spot here. I just thought of this, and you can kind of bounce this off of you. Erica Thomas for us writing a story. The city of Foley wants to widen the Foley Beach Express. They got the money. They got the contractors. They have everything in place except for one component, the approval of ALDOT. And ALDOT seems to be stalling here. Do you think this is just like, is this a coincidence? Is this some kind of passive aggressiveness? Like, are you aware of this problem? Like, what do you make of stuff like that?
Yeah, so the Beach Express, especially the Foley portion of it, needs significant maintenance. And that is something that it has needed and the city of Foley has responsibly been trying to do for the last couple of years, is get that ready. The county commission has entered into an agreement with the State Department of Transportation to transfer ownership of the Beach Express, the Foley portion, and the Baldwin Beach Express all the way to 10, along with some roads that connect to that famous bridge down in the south end of the county, to the State Department of Transportation. And in general, I'm in favor of that transition. That needs to be a state road. You shouldn't have a city like Foley trying to maintain, to the cost of, you know, millions of dollars, a four-lane road that sees mostly through traffic from, you know, from our visitors to the beach. So I'm glad ALDOT's moving in that direction. I do think that the county and cities ought to hold out to make sure we get a real connection to this new $100 million bridge they're building down there, and not something that uses, you know, old two-lane county roads and pig paths to get to it. So there's a little leverage there going back and forth. But at the end of the day, the State Department of Transportation, ALDOT, will end up with that road. It'll be a state highway just like 181. It'll be maintained by the state. And I think that actually will take some burden off the city of Foley.
Will we live long enough to see a connector between the I-10 Buc-ee's exit and something up in North Baldwin County with 65?
Absolutely. I mean, that is something that will happen. It will probably not be this ALDOT director and this governor, but it is a key driver of, you know, the beach is a key driver of economic activity in the state of Alabama. It is a key source of revenue, again, for the Education Trust Fund and the General Fund. And getting people in and out of Baldwin County efficiently and effectively to the beach without impacting the rest of us that are moving around is and should be a priority of the state of Alabama, and I expect that it will be in future administrations.
Yeah, I just like, you know, God bless them, the elders of the county back whenever when never anticipated like 59 being what it is today, right?
Of course not. And things happen and things change. And the question is just, are we going to continue to be completely reactive, or are we going to look at, you know, where development is happening, where growth is happening? In Baldwin County, seeing 19 people a day move to it, to say nothing of the 8.5 million visitors we see every single year. And we need to be able to handle that from an infrastructure standpoint. And the state needs to and should and will realize that the revenue that we are producing for the rest of the state justifies spending the infrastructure dollars in Baldwin County so that we can continue to move folks about in a healthy and sustainable manner. And that's why we need to do the Baldwin Beach Express North from 10 to 65. And that's why I will continue to push for the construction of that as a state road so that we can get that done.
Does it need to be a four lane? Could you pull it off with just two? I mean, what do you think of that?
I think that it would be foolish to just do a two lane road. I was on the commission when we explored that option. You save some money, but not enough to justify not going ahead and doing it. You end up doing all the dirt work and all the, you know, drainage work and most of the bridge work anyway. Go ahead and do the whole thing. I've had good conversations with the county commission to try to get this headed in the right direction as far as going ahead and acquiring the right of way and going ahead and doing some early planning on it. If they go ahead and do that, then, you know, when you get a governor that's interested in making sure that that project moves forward, it will be turnkey and ready to go. So there's a lot of forward planning that goes into things like that. But yes, I think that you will get a connector and you will get it, you know, in the near future. And it will be a game changer for moving traffic, you know, up and down north and south through the county.
There you have it, Senator. We got to leave it there. But thanks again for making time for us.
Thanks so much for having me. Y'all have a great weekend and a Merry Christmas.
State Senator Chris Elliott there. We got to get a break. We'll come back, wrap it all up here in just a moment. This is the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew.